The biggest pro football overlays in Vegas are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes only at Circa Sports. With two ways to win and no rake. Circa Million with quarterly payouts and 100% payback. And Circa Survivor. Select one team each week with no point spread. Take in the big money with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. Visit CircaSports.com for details.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Aloha on a beautiful Thursday, and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas, on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. I'm joined, as always, by G.K. Wiley, Armani Buckets, and Brandon Deutsch. How are we doing on this glorious Thursday?
I love how Arash always says this, and I think I said this for the past 2 years. Arash always says it's a beautiful morning. It's a beautiful day.
It's pretty gloomy outside today, actually. Yeah. It's not a beautiful morning. Los Angeles.
I'm waiting for the sun to peak, because like then I can be like on Arash's level of positivity of how beautiful it is out there. And also, my Rangers lost last night in overtime, so it is not a beautiful day.
They choked. They were out.
It was insane. Well, I will say this about them. They missed a bunch of opportunities, and then that goaltending was just ridiculous. It was just crazy. So I hope that they at least like come 1-1. Out of the series in Calgary. It is hard to play in Canada, so it is no joke. I don't care who you're playing. It is rough to play out there because hockey is gone.
I'm happy to be here, too. I feel like Pat Bev this morning in a good mood, ready to dish out some hot takes with my man Armand over here. Buckets.
Cannot wait.
I love it. All right, we have a lot to get into, G. Hey, we got hockey playoffs, we've got NBA playoffs, so let's get to today's headlines brought to you by Circa Sports. Circa Million, Circa Survivor Pro Football Contests are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Visit CircaSports.com. Hit it, G. Hey.
Well, guys, Steph Curry had 21 points and a game-high 12 boards, and the Golden State Warriors held Luka Doncic in check in beating the Dallas Mavs 112 to 87 on Wednesday night to take a 1-0 series lead in the Western Conference Finals. What do you think of the game, and are you still high on the Mavericks' chance to get in the NBA, to get to the NBA Finals?
Listen, I did not think this was my hot take. I like Golden State. I think the Warriors are the better team. And Steph Curry, I mean, this is a big moment. They are in the conference finals. They are back for the first time since 2019. Big win for them, like you mentioned, G. Hey, 112 to 87. By the way, I did enjoy that picture. Apparently, it was not taken yesterday of Luka enjoying a nice cold beverage outside by the bay. But apparently, that was taken a while ago. Just like the visual of Luka, you know, having a cold one and then drop in, let's just say 20, 30, you know, whatnot. But do like Golden State, liked him in game one. I like him in game two, and I do like the Golden State Warriors to go on to the NBA Finals. But I do think I'm in the minority here.
Yeah, I'm higher on the Mavericks than I ever was after that game one win. It's a hot take, but look at this stat by StatMuse right here, giving them credit. One of the best pages in the world for statistics, especially advanced stats. Right here, Mavs took 48 threes last night. Warriors let them get 48 threes. They only made 11, which is awful. And 44 of those were wide open. We talk about...
That's the stat everyone right there. Is 44
like,
wide open.
Everyone was like, oh, Andrew Wiggins did a fantastic job on Luka Doncic. Like, are you kidding? Luka just missed his shots. Jalen Brunson missed his shots. They all missed their shots. That is not happening again. I am more high on the Mavericks than I have ever been. If they make even... like 20 of those 48 threes, they are in that game, right? If they make 15, they might be in that game. This isn't going to continue. The Warriors defense, people are going to say, oh, it's back. They let them have 44 wide open threes. They got lucky. I'm sorry. I know Steph was efficient from the floor. That is a positive sign for the Warriors. Jordan Poole was efficient. Draymond Green played good defense. Kevon Looney was getting rebounds. But I would be very surprised if Golden State wins game two. I think the Mavs are going to come back and kill it next game. Wow. I still have Mavs in six.
The Mavs were trying to attack Kevon Looney all game in game one. That cannot be the strategy going forward, and it won't be. This is what a series is about. It's about adjusting. The strategy has to be Put Steph Curry and Jordan Poole in every pick and roll from the beginning of the game. Jordan Poole, I don't care what he did offensively. Patrick Beverley called Chris Paul a cone on defense. Jordan Poole looked like a cone trying to guard Jalen Brunson or Luka. I don't think that as the series goes along, he will be able to withstand defensively. Not to mention what you just said, Brandon. They're getting wide open looks.
Yeah.
When you start to miss them in the first quarter, it kind of deflates the team a little bit. And they were missing so many open shots in the first quarter, letting the Warriors get out in transition, offensive rebounds, a lot of self-inflicted mistakes by the Dallas Mavericks. And those self-inflicted mistakes start on the defensive end. You cannot lose sight of your man when you're playing Golden State. Those kind of things I definitely think are correctable, and I do agree with you. I got the Warriors winning game two, the Mavericks winning game two, and I still like Dallas as well.
Yeah, attack pool, man. Talk about defense. Yeah, he's in for offense. He's not in to play defense.
Yeah.
Attack him.
No, I 100% disagree with you guys. I don't think that the Warriors are going to sweep by any means. I think this will go to game six. I don't know. Even with those shots missed, there is something to be said about experience. And did anybody see that block that Draymond had in the first period, in the first quarter?
Yeah.
Like, if that's any indication of the level that these guys are at, that's a different level than where you guys have Luka, like, on this pedestal, this high pedestal that you have him on and have that rest of the team on.
I just can't get over, like, the Warriors should have lost to the Grizzlies if Ja Morant and Brooks were healthy for that whole series. They should have, like, albeit a couple games.
We should do, like, a friendly way. Well, we have a 1-0 lead right now in the series.
Yeah, we should.
Give me those odds on Dallas. Lock it in.
We should definitely be, like, the old school versus the new school.
That's exactly what it is. The other thing was that Klay Thompson had 0 points in the first half. Steph wasn't impactful in the first half. The Mavericks' game plan was to allow Andrew Wiggins to beat them, and hats off to Wiggins. He did beat them in game one.
Yeah, but
if that continues, you have to like your chances.
We talk about consistency.
Dallas.
Wiggins has not been a consistent force in a series ever in his career. How are we going to rely on him to continue this?
Yeah. Well,
there we go.
Well, game two of the Eastern Conference Finals are tonight, guys, with the Miami Heat looking to take a 2-0 series lead over the Boston Celtics. Circus Sports has the Heat as a 3-point favorite. Is this a must-win game for the Celts? And who do you guys like tonight?
You know, generally speaking, when you lose game one, I do think game two is kind of a must-win. I mean, it is a 7-game series, but you don't want to lose the first two. Just got an update here that Horford has been upgraded to questionable because of the health and safety protocol, so he'll probably play Marcus Smart. No Derek White, that's right. So, listen, I do like the Celtics tonight to tie up that series 1-1, going back to Boston, but this would be a massive win for the Heat. I mean, this was another one where, because I hate the Celtics, I'm going to go against them. But I just really like this Celtics team if they're not going to be at full strength. But, yeah.
I'll take Horford over White any day, though.
Okay.
Like, I'll take Horford over White.
Still questionable, though. He might not play.
But, I mean, I feel like if you're questionable for a game, like, you be playing. Like,
I don't know. Ben Simmons and Kyrie would tell you differently.
Okay, well, first of all, you cannot compare. Ben Simmons.
I'm kidding. Al Horford, I love you. I love you. 35-point masterclass in that last series. Respect to him. I'm going to just say this. Marcus Smart is back. You can lock in a Celtics win. I don't think the series is over if Miami wins, though, by any means. Yeah. I mean, the Celtics were dead in the water, down 3-2 after Jrue Holiday blocked Marcus Smart and won that game. They still came back. Dallas also, even if they're down 2-0, they could still come back. They were up 2-0 against the Clippers, and the Clippers came back last year, right? So I think game five is definitely a more important game than game two, in my opinion.
I think that I completely agree. Not a must-win game for the Celtics. I do think that they will win, and I don't think that this Miami team can win on the road, because on the road, your role players are not going to hit the shots that they hit in game one. We saw Max Strus, Gabe Vincent. I really think that after the Celtics win this game, the whole series momentum can shift, and we might not even see Miami win another game the rest of the series. Miami will win game five.
Okay.
But I think the Celtics will win the next three, including tonight. And then Celtics win in six. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Celtics rattled off four in a row. This team is really, really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys just mentioned it. Marcus Smart coming back. Game one, Jimmy Butler was hunting the mismatch in the fourth quarter. There is no mismatch when Marcus Smart replaces Peyton Pritchard. And by the way, Derek White missing, that's okay, because Peyton Pritchard did a great job offensively to replace him, and Aaron Nesmith came off the bench and gave them great minutes. They're deep. This team is loaded. Yeah, Jason Tatum just has to take care of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, I think we said this from jump. I totally agree with you, Armand. His team is ridiculous. If they can play the way that I know that their defense has been playing pretty much all, you know, Eastern Conference Finals long, like, they're unstoppable. I think that they're unstoppable. And whoever comes out of the East is going to win, and I think it's going to be Boston. So, kudos to them, and I really hope that I win my bet all on Boston. Well, Alabama coach Nick Saban did it again. He singled out Texas A&M for buying, I'm using quotation marks for those that can't see me, its top-ranked signing class, and threw a spotlight on the unintended effect of name, image, and likeness rights on recruiting last night. Jimbo Fisher fired back at Saban today, calling his comments despicable and calling Saban a narcissist, and says people should dig into his past and find out how he does things. What did you think of Saban's comments?
I loved it. It was fantastic. By the way, we don't have a ton of college football drama right now. I do want to play for you guys.
If you're thinking about buying solar pan.
Of the press conference, you know, it was hilarious. So Jimbo Fisher, normally, you know, you're the coach, you take the high road, and you don't really want to chime in. And I think Saban said something at a booster event or something along those lines, called Jimbo Fisher to apologize and said, hey, it came. Jimbo refused to take the phone call and wanted to play for you guys a clip of the press conference, just because Jimbo just goes in on Saban. It's hilarious. I don't know if we can play a clip.
Yeah, we're doing it right.
All right.
Last night in Alabama?
Yes, it would. First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable.
Modern technology is not my friend.
Somebody can say things about somebody and an organ. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. That they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way. Or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parody in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M, because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. These coaches have done a great job.
I just love it. I mean, you could listen to the entire thing on YouTube. I mean, it was a press conference, and it was fantastic. This is fantastic. This is good for college football. Rivalries are good for college football. I know these are coaches, but right now it's kind of like a little bit of a dead period. I think it's fantastic.
Nick Saban should not have said that. Dude, like, come on, bro. Like, everyone knows you're the guy who's giving all these kids NIL deals in Alabama. The whole state of Alabama, like, is all the big companies in Alabama, they're doing these NIL deals with these kids. It's no different. Yeah. There's no rules being broken. Like, this is, like, it's like a free market out there. You can do whatever the heck you want, like Jimbo said.
Yeah,
right?
there was no need to bring this up.
Unless he's scared.
So that's the other thing. I think he is, because I think he's afraid of losing all these kids, because now that they can go anywhere else and play anywhere else and get their money and get paid.
Yeah.
Now Alabama is singled out, and they can't be like, okay, well, you're gonna come to us and we can give you like X amount. We can blue chip you. Yeah. We can be a blue chip program and be like, you know what? Your mom wants to live in, you know, off campus and like this really, really nice house. We'll pay for that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. These things are real. These things actually do happen. And for all those that live in La La Land think that like this doesn't happen, it does.
And I think he's scared because for years, Alabama has just been a monopoly in college football. And now it's kind of with this NIL stuff, you're going to see Texas come back. You're going to see USC come back. you're going to see these SEC teams that can offer more money. And it's going to, I think this is great for the sport. I know people are saying regulate it, but like, I honestly think this is great for the sport. And this rivalry is good for this. This is going to be a good game this year. Oh, and they beat them last year.
Yeah.
We forget that. Yep. Like, this is going to be great. I just hope USC can have a decent enough defense to win a game against like a Utah and get into a big bowl game.
We just have to score, you know, 50 points a game.
We will. It's that Oklahoma offense. It's that Oklahoma offense. Jordan Addison, let's go to USC. Come on, dude. Right. Like, make the decision already.
My only thing is when they tease stuff like Jimbo teased the stuff about Nick Saban, I wish they would just say what he's talking about.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Don't tease us with
dig into his past. You'll see what I'm talking about. Like,
what are you referring to?
We want to hear the tea, man.
I mean, I think that also... I think that's also directed towards, you know, the inner circle.
Oh,
it's
for
like,
sure.
Dude, guys, come on. Like, we all know that it's finally time to, like, call this guy out and be like, let's put him under the bus or bring him under the bus, whatever. Well, there have been a bunch of tweets from teams, players, and media members directed at the Lakers' lack of diligence in regards to protection over draft picks. Is it concerning that the Lakers front office woes are being exposed and made fun of even by opposing organizations and players?
Listen, it is, but I'm just saying this because I've said it before. They made these comments in the summer of 2019 before the Lakers went on to win the championship. So yes, it is concerning. What you don't want to have happen, and they're not there right now, you don't want to go through that six-year phase where the Lakers literally could not sign anybody. I mean, whether it's LaMarcus Aldridge, Carmelo, you go down the list of guys who didn't even think about coming here. They're not there yet. They still have a very, you know, on paper, a talented team. But it is concerning. But I will say the last time that we heard about what the heck is Jeannie Buss doing, she should sell the team. Why is she getting advice from Kurt and Phil and Linda? I'm telling you, they won a championship. So I personally am not that concerned.
Yeah, I think it's very concerning. I think it's a concerning thing to not have a good reputation around league circles.
Yes. Yeah.
But
yes.
The thing is that no matter what the Lakers do, like you mentioned, Arash, people are still going to find ways to look for the flaws in their organization. It's really hard to tell what is going on. Not to say that they are doing things correctly. I don't think they're doing things correctly at all. But no matter what they do, people are always going to say, well, there's some dysfunction over there in the Lakers organization. There's some dysfunction over there. And I think that that's never going to change, even when they're doing things well.
Yeah, Armand, great points. That's part of the reason why they only had 33 wins. Every team was playing their best game against the Lakers. They're going to come at your head. It's like the Yankees organization. They're going to try and do everything to beat you and make fun of you. And the Pelicans, them tweeting at them, saying like, oh, like the Alvarado steal, Grand Theft Alvarado with the pick. Like, that's great, but like, look at your rings, you know, like that's why they're doing that. That's why they're doing it. They're coming for the king of the organization. Everyone talks about the Lakers all year long, whether they're bad or good. They are the most popular team in the association. Oh, yeah. There's no denying that. And look, yes, Armand, you're right. The front office woes, that's an issue, and we can get into that. And everyone knows they can take advantage of Rob Pelinka right now. He needs to show up this offseason. I think he can. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's done it a couple years back. But let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news for you guys is that, or Laker fans, sorry, because I'm not including myself in that conversation, is that you did win a title. Bubble or no bubble, you guys did win a title in the last, like, 2 years. So, like, you can't really sit there and complain and be that person that's like, oh, well, the Lakers organization is so horrible, you know? So, well, the Angels were swept by arguably the worst team in the division, the Texas Rangers, and are now one game back of the Houston Astros. The Angels gave up 6 runs in the first game, 10 runs in the second game, and 6 runs again in the series finale. Was there elite pitching at the beginning of the season a fluke, guys? Or are these performances against a mediocre Rangers team a fluke? And will the pitching staff improve during the rest of the season back to what it was just last week or even two weeks ago?
Look, following this team, growing up an Angel fan, I'm always pessimistic about the outlook. This is the same old, bullpen flaws. Starting pitching flaws in general for the Angels. It came back to haunt them in this series. Their offenses look great. They're putting up runs. They're competitive in every game. But the pitching was phenomenal last week and awful this week. And there's a disparity there. You can't be awful against losing teams. The Yankees beat every losing team pretty much. The Orioles, they'll take 3 out of 4 or they'll sweep them. Any bad team, they'll take 3 out of 4. The Angels getting swept by a team that is arguably one of the 5 worst teams in the MLB is very concerning for this team's outlook. They need to do something with the bullpen. The guy they gave almost $20 million a year, Rafael Iglesias, has not been good. He's supposed to be a dominant closer. The other guys, they were given a seventh inning guy, $7 million, Ryan Tepera, and he's been awful. At least Aaron Loop's been good. But look, they're not going to have this pitching all year. This kind of reminds me of we'll see what they do this week. Let's see how they bounce back. This is definitely the best team they've had in years. So, and it's resilient. They stay in games. That's a positive note, right? They're not going to just give up. So that's important. But we'll see how they respond against Oakland this weekend. They really need to sweep Oakland.
I mean, considering where you guys were versus where you are now, why are we calling this a fluke? Good on them, you know? Yeah. The improvement that the Angels have had in just literally the past year has been so phenomenal, and I think that we just need to take that also into consideration.
There's also a small window here. It's kind of like the Clippers with the Kawhi thing. You got Trout, you got Ohtani, you got all this. Yes, we want to make the playoffs. We haven't made the playoffs, but if we get in the playoffs, we want a World Series. This is a team built to win a World Series.
Yeah.
It's just about the pitching.
Yeah, all right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Nick Hamilton. When we return right here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, The Fan in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
The biggest pro football overlays in Vegas are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes only at Circa Sports. With 2 ways to win and no rake. Circa Million with quarterly payouts and 100% payback. And Circa Survivor. Select one team each week with no point spread. Take in the big money with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Enter in Vegas. Play from anywhere. Visit CircaSports.com for details.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still clown with the underground when
we come around. Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California. 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or a comment or want to win tickets to a future Galaxy or Sparks game, call our hotline 310-400-0340. Okay, let's go now to the Circa Sports guest hotline. Circa Million, Circa Survivor, pro football contest with $12 million in guaranteed prizes are back. Visit CircaSports.com for details. Here he is, our good friend, Nick Hamilton. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. A rough end of a week off, so I'm feeling better.
That's right. Nick, a lot to get into. Let's start with the playoffs. And let's really begin here because we've covered Chris Paul a ton when he was with the Clippers. And one of the knocks against him was, for whatever reason, had some of the worst games of his career during the biggest moments. And he saved his worst game of his entire life for Game 7 at home against the Mavericks. And Nick, to be down 40 points in the fourth quarter of that game, your thoughts on the Suns flaming out and the performance from Chris Paul?
Absolutely embarrassing. Even though Chris Paul is a future Hall of Famer, he didn't display that in the last, I would say, even 3 games of the series, and I'm being very lenient when I say that. Chris Paul did not look a shell of himself as we saw versus the last series that he was in, when he actually knew everything was on the line and went perfect from, you know, from field goal range, as well as he looked like the Chris Paul that we had been accustomed to seeing. I don't know. And I know the report came out that he was injured. He played through injury. That could have been a factor, but yet and still, I can't have that as an excuse because you allowed yourself to be out on the court. You are the floor general. Is Chris Paul the star of the team? Absolutely not. Is he a star? Yes. The star of the team was Devin Booker, which is more disappointing when Devin Booker didn't show up. He was a milk carton all-star the last 3 games of that series. And the simple fact is Monty Williams got outcoached by Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Because Jason Kidd made the necessary adjustments, and Luka Doncic made sure he made his adjustments to ensure that he would be able to be effective in that series. And he made, basically put the team on his back and led that team and willed that team to victory and made sure that, hey, you want to disrespect me? Okay, I'm not going to be yapping in the media. I'm going to do my talking on the court. And that's why every time he knocked down a jumper, every time he knocked down a shot, he would look at the bench and laugh.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's exactly what we saw. So Chris Paul, disappointing. The Suns going to have to figure something out. There's going to be a lot of movement in Phoenix, I believe, in this offseason. And they're going to have to figure out how they're going to get it together, because Chris Paul ain't getting any older. I mean, any younger, rather.
Yeah. Your thoughts on Luka Doncic? I mean, there's a lot of people making the comparisons to, you know, LeBron's run in 2007, where it kind of came out of nowhere. He beat the Pistons on his way to the finals. We'll see how the conference finals go. Again, they lost game one. But, Nick, I mean, you've watched him these last couple of years losing in the first round to the Clippers. But, I mean, when you talk about a superstar, I mean, a transcendent talent. Your thoughts on Luka, his performance, A, against the Suns, and now going up against Steph Curry?
Well, first of all, slow your roll like your leg was broken, because there's no way that I mean Luka is a star, no question. Luka has gone through his bumps and bruises, and he's going to continue to go through his bumps and bruises, but he's going to eat it. The one thing about Luka, even though he has a phenomenal basketball IQ, he is going to have to still learn, because he has a lot of growth ahead of him. And so when you look at Luka Doncic, the way he approaches the game, yeah, much like LeBron at Cerebral, when you look at how he affects a game as far as the impact of a game, it's very LeBron-esque. But I think Luka is his own individual. I think Luka Doncic is definitely a superstar and on the verge of being one of the faces of the league. And I say the verge because he hasn't arrived yet. Yes, they've gotten to the Western Conference Finals, which they're playing against Golden State, a real team. But at the same time, Luka needs another bona fide star to be paired with him, which is why I did not pick them to beat the Golden State Warriors in this series, because they don't have another bona fide star. Much like how we saw LeBron hook up with AD, or Kawhi with PG, or like we've seen Golden State with, you know, Glass Mountain with Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry, and then along with Draymond Green, and a quiet Andrew Wiggins. So, to me, it's just too much too soon. And I think Luka needs to take his bumps and bruises. I think he's going to be definitely a first star. But I think also, too, he's going to learn from these experiences. And every experience he learns from, as we saw with the previous first-round knockout, he's putting in work on, and he's improved his game, which is why Dallas Mavericks are currently in the Western Conference Finals battling for a seat at the NBA Finals table.
Nick, Brandon Deutsch here. I wanted to ask you a question since you brought up the Suns making changes this offseason. DeAndre Ayton, restricted free agent, obviously played the 17 minutes in that game 7. There's a disconnect there with how they're implementing him and utilizing him. What do you think is the move there to make this team compete and still have this window that they have? Do they do a sign and trade? I know the free agent class this year is really weak, so it'd have to be like a sign and trade. But what do you think the move is there, and who do you think would be great to get in a sign and trade to kind of keep this window open for the Suns?
Honestly, before Chris Paul arrived in the Valley of the Sun, DeAndre Ayton was the guy next to Devin Booker.
Yeah.
And he was the double-double guy. And now his points had rescinded. His touch is rescinded because he had a floor general on Chris Paul. So that changed the style of his game. He still believes he's a max player. I don't think he's a max player. Do I think he's a good player with potential to be that max player at some point? Absolutely. It's DeAndre freaking Ayton. We saw what he did in the University of Arizona when he was a man among boys. I think the partners, I think a couple of teams could benefit from his services. One of those teams here being in Los Angeles with the Los Angeles Clippers. I think the Los Angeles Clippers, if they are going to make a serious run to the NBA Finals, because I do believe Steve Ballmer did not pay $2 billion just to get to the Western Conference Finals and be satisfied. Steve Ballmer is a winner. That is his mentality. He bought this team to bring a championship to Los Angeles. And I do believe this is the final year for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Reggie Jackson and those boys to get the job done. And if they don't, and in order for them to help get the job done, I think you bring in a guy, Jay Ayton, to help get that job done. Because if you have Kawhi, PG, Reggie Jackson, and DeAndre Ayton, who the hell is stopping that? I'll wait, because I don't think anybody's stopping that. And I think you would trade possibly, maybe package up a T-Man, package up a Luke Kennard, maybe give up a future first-round pick, and maybe even, you know, Zubac. Because Zubac ain't gonna get you to the promised land. I'm telling you that right now. Zubac is not getting you to the promised land. But if you have a kid like DeAndre who's happy number one with a team who wants him number two, and a guy that can actually flourish in that offense under Ty Lue, I think that's the guy you have to seriously take consideration and look at.
Yeah, and I would love that as a basketball fan. I think they're already a finals contender, the Clippers. That would obviously make them probably the favorite in the Western Conference for sure. The issue I have is, like, they're already 30, 40 million above the luxury tax. I know Ballmer's going to pay it. He's so rich, he could pay anything. But do they have the capital to get a DeAndre Ayton to sign and trade? I know you brought up Kennard and all those guys. I just don't think it's possible that the Suns do that unless they give up like two future first rounders. Because I still think the Suns value DeAndre Ayton and will use that in trade talks.
And they're a little bit like the Lakers, right? They don't have a ton of first round picks. I mean, they traded them all for Paul George. So we'll see how that goes. Nick, I did want to get your thoughts on this. You cover all sports in Los Angeles. The team that I really love a lot, no one's really talking about them, the Sparks. Not that they were the championship favorites, but Nick, at 2-3, losing their first home game, I do think the seat's getting a little bit hot here. For Derek Fisher, I know he's a Lakers great, a fan favorite in Los Angeles. Your thoughts here, Nick, because I think, and I think you probably agree, maybe we'll see, if they had a very good coach, I think this is obviously a contending team.
I think it starts with the organization.
Yeah.
I think the organization has allowed mediocrity to permeate throughout the organization, which permeates throughout the coaches and even some of the players. I think Nneka Ogwumike is a bona fide star. I think he's absolutely incredible. I think there are a few other young ladies on that team that are absolutely incredible. The bonehead mistake made by Derek Fisher against a donut and four team in the Minnesota Lynx the other night that gave them their first win.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely mind-boggling. It reminded me of what Brandon Staley did against the Las Vegas Raiders. And Brandon Staley has an excuse. He's a first-year head coach. He's going to make those mistakes. I guarantee Brandon Staley won't make that same mistake again. Derek Fisher, on the other hand, has made that same type of mistake over and over and over again. I would be absolutely shocked if Derek Fisher was fired as the head coach of the Los Angeles Sparks. I would be absolutely shocked because I don't think it's going to happen. Liz Cambage has not impressed me one bit since she arrived in Los Angeles. And she's had one really good game. That was just the Indiana Fever, I believe. She got 22-11. But she backed away from the basket. And if you're 6'8", 6'9", 230, 235, you should be the MVP of the WNBA. You should be dominating like Shaq did in his prime. And there's no reason why she should be settling for jumpers like she's Joel Embiid. Okay?
Yeah.
But she doesn't fit this team. I'm sorry. I mean, I know a lot of Sparks fans may listen to your fine program. They want to disagree with me, and that's fine. I'll take all the smoke you want. I don't really give a damn. When I do, you'll be the first to know. But I'm gonna tell it like it is and not like it was. Liz Cambage does not fit this team. She looks like the Las Vegas Liz Cambage that we saw taking plays off, backing away from the basket, not being as aggressive as she should have been. And that's why the Aces didn't want to re-sign her, because they knew they knew the type of player that she is. And she's a phenomenal player. She's immensely talented, no question. But you don't see that consistently on the court. You see Nneka Ogwumike. You see Chinee coming off the bench adding quality minutes. You see Carter. You see George Canada. You see a lot of those players giving their all, but you don't see that from Liz Cambage. Hell, she's winded by the fourth or fifth minute of the first quarter. How the hell can you be winded in the season just started? But you got Nneka Nwabuike out there giving up 25, 30 minutes a game. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I'm sorry. Get your big butt in the post and dominate. I tell that to a male player like a female player, so please don't come at me about the whole gender situation, because I say that about a female player just like I say about a male player. So I miss it with that. But what I'm saying is, you have the opportunity to dominate. You can dominate Tina Charles. You can dominate Sylvia Fowles. You can dominate Alea Deladon when you play her. You can dominate a lot of these players that you have an advantage over because you have the skill set to do it. You just don't do it. I don't understand why.
What happened? What do you think happened with Liz? Because when she was with the Wings, I mean, when you look at that stat line, like one of the greatest players, like seasons in league history, she goes to Vegas. She's in Los Angeles now. Obviously, she wants to do a lot of things off the court. She's into fashion, things like that. Do you think that's played a role?
Sometimes you can be a don in your own mind.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is sometimes you know how great you are, but it doesn't translate on the court. And people keep telling you how great you are, you start to believe your own hype. And I think she started to believe that she's greater than what she is, or at least what she's displaying on the court. And that's not a knock against her. Again, I think she's tremendously talented. But we don't see that on a consistent basis. And when you're playing these teams like the Aces, you're playing the Phoenix Mercury, which they're going to play next Wednesday at Staples, or excuse me, Crypto, whatever the hell it's called these days. And you're going to play the Seattle Storm.
Yeah.
You know, those are three of the top teams in the Western Conference, in my estimation. And then you go east, you look at Connecticut, you look at Washington, and then you have to look at the champion Chicago Sky, who you beat in Chicago. But rest assured, Candace Parker is coming back for revenge when they come back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You couldn't. Candace challenged you, to come at her, and you didn't come at her the way that you should have. And so that's going to be a problem down the stretch. And if Derek Fish doesn't get these rotations correct and in order, and I didn't understand the other night, how the hell are you down three and you go for two? What the hell logic was in that?
Yeah.
Even Nneka Nwabuike, as intelligent as she is, couldn't even explain. And Derek Fisher, who drew up the play, didn't really give you a great explanation. I mean, I thought I was listening to the politicians battling for mayor of Los Angeles versus listening to the head coach of the park.
Nick, we talked about this in the first segment. The Dodgers are playing well. Is there some concern with Max Muncy, Trey Turner, Cody, not hitting the long ball? What's your thoughts? A, they are an extremely deep team, so you don't have to have the entire lineup playing well. But about those three guys in particular, is there some concern there?
I think the most concern is Trey Turner.
Yeah.
I think Trey Turner is a guy that, and plus him being on the contract year, I think that's most concerning to him. I think it's most concerning to the Dodgers because he should be hitting. I think Max Muncy, I mean, he's coming off an injury, so I think we need to kind of relax on Max Muncy. Yeah. It's going to take him time to battle back from that injury. I think it's going to take him time to get into the swing of things and really feel the way that we've seen Max Muncy approach the play. And really swing that bat the way he's been accustomed to him swinging it. So I give Max Muncy a pass because he's got to take his time. He's got to get right. He's got to get mentally right. He's also got to get physically right as well. But I think the underlying thing is between Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, and even when they were going through that slump against the Phillies, Mookie Betts was the most consistent because he was actually hitting the ball and making contact with the ball.
Yeah.
In addition to knocking out homers, I think Mookie Betts and along with Freddie Freeman have been the two that have really kept this Dodger team afloat and has really been able to keep the team, as you said, even though they're deep, to keep the team in the right direction. Because we saw the other really kind of struggled on the mound against the D-backs, but they were able to maintain their lead and be able to get some offensive help and get on base the way they need to get on base. So I think the Dodgers will be fine. Again, it's still early in the season. They got a long season to go. We're not even close to the All-Star break yet.
Yeah.
So I think, they're going to have to take one series at a time. Hopefully everybody remains healthy. Nobody catches COVID or anything of that nature. And that way they won't prevent them from being in the lineup on a consistent basis. So between health, not injuries, the Dodgers will be fine. They got to be on a very tough road trip coming up. They got to face the same field that, you know, kind of beat the brakes off of them 3 out of 4 at Dodger Stadium. So they got to look for some type of revenge, and they got to take it series by series. That's the best way they can do it. They have to take it series by series. Hey, if it's 3 games, let's get 2 out of 3 and let's move on. They have that type of mentality of 3 out of 4, whatever it is. They have that type of mentality. I think the Dodgers will be fine as they return to Dodger Stadium on May 31st for their home stand.
Last one for you, Nick, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up because this is a big story right now. Phil Jackson is advising Jeannie Buss and the Lakers, and one of the things that apparently he is advising her is to keep Russell Westbrook because they do not want to part with multiple first-round draft picks in order to move him. Your thoughts, is there a scenario, Nick Hamilton, where Russell Westbrook coming back to the Los Angeles Lakers could be a good thing?
We have enough liquor to get through the show, to get through this explanation, Arash.
Yeah.
You know what, Arash? I tell you, my friend, I think they're stuck with Westbrook. I think they are stuck with LeBron. I think you keep LeBron for another year and then let him go.
Yeah.
And then start the rebuilding process. If you choose to hang on to the street clothes, better known as Anthony Davis, that's what you do, and you build around that.
Yeah,
I think you just you clean house after this season, because I don't think much is going to change. In this season. I don't think they're going to win the championship. They may make the playoffs, but they're not going to go deep. There's better teams out there, especially if moves are being made in the Western Conference and even in the Eastern Conference as well. I don't see them getting to a championship. I think they're done winning championships. I think LeBron is done winning championships by his political rhetoric that he likes to talk about. I'm hungrier than ever. No, you're not. Shut up. You're trying to beat Kareem's record. You're about LeBron breaking Kareem's all-time scoring record. And that's fine. Just don't hype us up and don't feed us up on BS because we see right through it like some of Santa Scott's saying. So just do what you need to do. Get your body right. Invest that $1 million on your body. Get your body right. Try to stay as healthy as you can. And try to play some exciting basketball and get the fans happy and engaged. That's all you can do. I don't see them trading LeBron. If they do, though, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Stranger things would happen.
I mean, the thing about LeBron, I think Jeannie, I mean, LeBron is part of that circle. Like, when you read who she's getting advice from, it's from Magic Johnson, Phil Jackson, Kurt Rambis, Linda Rambis, and LeBron James. So,
Smash, Crackle, and Pop.
It's amazing.
Who else can get advice from?
Right, exactly. Nick, you're the best. Always love having you on. So, listen, I'm going to see you at a game. You're the hardest working man in Los Angeles, my friend. So, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Pleasure.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing worldwide through the hard times.